This is Donnie Jackson, editor of IWC's Urgent Communications, and today I'm speaking with our good friends from Rapid Deploy, James Mitchell and Steve Roucher. Guys, thanks for taking the time to speak with us today.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Donnie.
I'll tell you, it's been interesting to follow you all. Steve, it was 2017, I heard about some company called Rapid Deploy that was at like NINA conference or something that year, and something about cloud and 911. And, you know, I had seen really a lot of really cool cloud things that show up really well on demos and things like that in booths at trade shows and everything. But I had always been told never in 911. They just won't trust it. Tell me how things changed.
Donnie, they told me the same thing. They told me to go back home to Africa because the American doesn't do 911 in the cloud. I think we both got that same hymn sheet. Things have changed quite significantly. That was June 17 when I first arrived. Having seen the opportunity in the American market for a totally different way of doing business, we actually opened our doors. Rapid Deploy moved to Austin, Texas, and opened our doors in early 2019. We just celebrated our three-year anniversary in America. So things have definitely changed. In 3 years, we've managed to win 8 statewide contracts and rolled out literally hundreds and hundreds of PSAPs using our technology. And I think America is a very different place and a very hopeful place for the future of NG911.
Okay, you mentioned your technology. Remind people again which aspects of 911 you're involved in.
Okay, that's actually a great question. Thank you, Donnie. So when we arrived in 2017, we were focused as a CAD business, a computer-aided dispatch business. We actually referred to ourselves as cloud-aided dispatch. And then we started evolving our solution set, seeing where the opportunities were in the market. And actually, very recently, in this December just gone by, we had to take a stark look at our business and realize we're absolutely crushing it in mapping and analytics and all these state-run regional deals in America. And we were still having some struggles with our CAD product. So we actually recently paused development on our CAD product and have doubled down on mapping and analytics as our core products in the U.S. market. And funny enough, I think the market really liked that because we just got awarded a statewide deal in Minnesota just a couple of weeks ago. So that is just – and we've got a few other tricks up our sleeve, which will be releasing a couple of new products over the next few years. But right now, that is call-taking, mapping, and analytics for the 911 centers that we focus on.
Okay. So James, tell me a little bit about the ecosystem that you guys, are both a part of and are helping create here.
Sure. That's a great question. I mean, I think something that I've seen change over the last, 5 or 6 years is really this idea of building a platform for public safety technology. And most companies that have a public safety interest also have an interest in working together. But what it takes is a sort of a cohesive centerpiece, right? And when I was at FirstNet, we thought of broadband as a platform. That network would be a platform to surface new capabilities, new integrations for public safety, and nothing that was necessarily rocket science, but things that would simplify the workflow for the end user and ultimately the customer of public safety, right? From a 911 perspective, when I got to Rapid Deploy, it was very clear that central to the mission was being that cohesion for what is now a large, to me, ecosystem of, potential competitors, but also people who are cooperating for this common mission to support public safety and to deliver 21st century public safety to, the 911 end user. That's like you and me calling 911, right? It is fundamental that we don't create a walled garden, that we work together to make sure that this works for public safety. We talk to partners every day, right, Steve, where, they're excited not just about the technology, but the potential influence they can have on the outcome for saving lives. And so that's a really, for me, that's a get out of bed moment. So I really do enjoy that.
Yeah, and I'd add to that, I'd say that, we've been quite selective in the partners we onboard into our ecosystem. We're quite thoughtful about that because the partners also need to play nicely in the sandbox. And when we can see these partners leveraging each other's solutions within our solution, Mm-hmm. And you get that accretive moment. It's just that's the most powerful thing that we as a tech enabler can really do and bring to 911.
Well, it's been amazing to watch it. You know, the thing I've always heard from people is, hey, the people calling 911 have all this broadband capability, and now with FirstNet and prioritized service from other carriers, you know, the people out in the field, the public safety people out in the field have this capability. And then in the middle is 911. You know, James, do you think that mindset is changing in terms of, hey, we need this to not be the bottleneck in between these two broadband capable entities?
Absolutely. I think the mindset hit, you know, people were afraid that we'd ossified to a single solution for broadband. I think everyone showed up in the marketplace in a different way, and that's positive, right? There's one FirstNet, but there's multiple networks. And what we want to be a part of at Rapid Deploy is a broader ecosystem for public safety that I think is still sort of, you know, there's a tectonic shift in the market over the last 3 years where, you know, customers are reacting in a meaningful way, not just from the tools they use, but how they actually procure the tools, who they're procuring through and who they're going to for certain services. And I think that's all a reaction to what is essentially people being exhausted from what you just described, which is I don't have tools that I, for my job, that I have as just a regular person on the street, a civilian with this broadband capability, to give the example. And bringing some of those fundamentals to bear has been, you know, eye-opening, obviously, from a use case perspective, but then to build on top of that and to go past, you know, how you and I use a phone to mission critical, and to think about reliability and talk to, you know, companies like Microsoft and Amazon who now have 5-9 missions where they didn't have them before. That to me, watching that as a spectator has been informative, but to also be a part of that now and pick and choose where we want to go strategically and how we make that happen, that is obviously you know, well worth its while. So I think we're in an interesting place right now, and I would stay tuned for this year. It's going to be pretty crazy.
All right, well that's a good tease. So Steve, I want to, I don't know whether it's 2018 or whatever, you know, you said, hey, everyone's going to be moving to the cloud and 911. Right. Like, you know, 911 traditionally, frankly, moved at a glacial pace. And so I was like, yeah, I think that makes sense. But, you know, things usually don't happen fast in 911. 3 years later, everybody, even all the on-premise guys, all are touting the fact that they have cloud stuff. Tell me, what are you seeing? And frankly, do you still get any pushback from people saying, no, we want all of our stuff on-premise?
That's an excellent question. I got to say that part of that journey, right, Donnie, was one, you know, the first question I would always get was, what if the internet goes down, right? And then it was, okay, the internet's not a safe place for public safety. Then, of course, JEDI contract comes out and it was like, okay, well, you know, the cloud's being used by the DOD. I guess it is a safe place for the DOD. It's pretty okay for public safety. Then it's, what if the internet goes down? Then FirstNet appears. Suddenly you can get, you know, this priority and preemption backhaul over the FirstNet network. So and suddenly that's not, the pipe isn't the question anymore. So the last piece, right, how like we stitch this whole system together, is how do you marry the existing legacy equipment with the cloud? Because that was the big blocker, right? You can't move everybody's entire stack into the cloud in one fell swoop. So how do we do that? And that's when, you know, when we won the state of California for a statewide location accuracy project with our mapping solution, that's when the penny dropped, and we went and built our IoT platform called the Edge Emergency Data Gateway platform, and that helped us integrate the on-prem telephony and all the downstream signals from that, like location and phone number and call detail record information, and to be able to translate that from literally a serial cable connection into an IP-based feed to be consumed in our cloud-based platform. That was the piece that unlocked not just the market into cloud, but it also enabled the platform to have real utilization. And this is something that we've come across in the marketplace time and time again. You know, you can put another Flugelbinder on another monitor in somebody's PSAP, but doesn't mean they're going to use it, right? And if unless you're part of the actual workflow, you're going to be overlooked. People aren't going to log in or pay attention. And when you give things away, nobody ascribes value to those things either. And that's another challenge. So we had to work out a way to integrate into the workflow, to do it in the cloud, to make sure that everybody had buy-in. And so when we solved those pieces, that's when we saw the flywheel spin and all these states come to us and go, can we have a piece of that too? So there's like, can't just look at the market and go, hey, everybody just want a cloud now. It's like, you know, we're not solving for cloud. We're solving for a better solution. Cloud is the delivery mechanism for that better solution, but I still need to be able to get my old stuff into the cloud. And unless you're fixing that, the new solution doesn't count. Mm-hmm. So it was seeing that entire end-to-end vision and knowing, like, if it doesn't serve the mission, it's not in the product, right? So not being overwhelmed with, you know, bells and whistles and things flying around on the screen and everything else. We want to be very measured in the signals we take in because we're building a relationship of trust, right? The same way that a citizen has a relationship of trust, the minute they dial 911, they know someone's going to answer their call. They know absolutely someone's going to answer their call, right? So the same way that a 911 telecommunicator needs to know the software that they're actually working with is designed for them to be their primary call-taking map to integrate with all their, you know, GIS environment with, you know, and make sure that all the signals that come into them are meaningful. It's not just noise, not like another false alarm. I want to know that a human being is, has interpreted those signals, right? So like, for example, when we launched with OnStar in the state of California in May of last year, you know, we were the first software platform to be able to do that with OnStar in any 911 center in the world. And the reason we did it with them first is because they have set the gold standard for how to triage an IoT signal. It's vehicle telematics to OnStar, but as this whole world opens up to the floodgates of IoT, unless you're doing it with people that are ACE accredited, like, you know, running protocols, working the same workflow that a 911 call taker works, so when they get patched in, they know that that call is real and it's meaningful, and they're going to look at the data, and that data it counts. And so that is like how we are keep introducing features and signals and partners into the market, but making sure we're not overwhelming 911. We're partnering with them, and they've got to trust us because we trust them when we call.
Okay. And, you know, you mentioned IoT, and I'm kind of curious, what are some of the challenges you're seeing with IoT from a 911 perspective? And frankly, the tools you all are building, I would think that all these guys running smart cities and smart grids would be saying, hey, I want some of that. You guys have been very focused, you know, on public safety on the 911 side, but mm-hmm. I'm just kind of curious, are people knocking on the door saying, hey, these are some interesting tools I heard about. Could we have them from the SmartX side?
Yeah, so that's a very interesting question. There's two pieces to that question, Donnie. So firstly, I would say that we've had the benefit of watching some of this action happening from the sidelines, because, you know, the pioneers have arrows in their back, right? We don't want to be the pioneer in everything. And we can only take so many body blows as a small company, right? And we want to make sure that when we are taking data from IoT partners, they are trusted and vetted and their signals are real. And so that is kind of the bar that we've set to make sure that we're a trusted partner to our partners downstream. And then just, you know, yes, IoT and signals and GIS is incredibly meaningful, anything from oil and gas to smart cities, enterprise. We're going to be announcing some deals in the next few months, which are going to speak to those verticals. But right now, we have nothing in the public that we can talk about, but certainly there's something in the cards.
Oh, come on. It's just us.
No. I've heard that before, Donnie.
Yeah. So, James, you mentioned your time at FirstNet. I guess,
yeah.
You know, you talked about, Steve just mentioned, you know, people taking arrows as pioneers, and you guys certainly did, as you all travel the country, try to explain that a new concept. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, what are, in your mind, are some of the parallels between what you experienced there and what you're seeing here that you're doing?
Mm-hmm. Well, Steve just mentioned that, you know, the users like to be partners. And I think that just from a, one thing I've learned in my career is just consulting your customer, which seems obvious, like consulting them deeply and understanding and listen and take back that feedback and try to make something out of it is really important. But also sort of figuring out where the water's edge is between consultation and development, right? So we want to take your input. We also want to create features that the market will react to, not just specifically one customer, because we have to scale this. And you know, to the IoT point, right? Something we heard a lot about in the early days of FirstNet was just simple connectivity and push to talk, which was obviously key. No one was talking about IoT. No one was talking about smart cities or smart assistants. And I remember watching that evolution as we released what is essentially an LTE RFP, and oh, here's 5G right around the corner, and here's all these IoT signals that we're going to have to start ingesting and accounting for. And you know, being caught off guard like that was eye-opening. But it's a good problem to have if you think about it, because if you are out in front and you are learning quickly and failing fast and trying to figure out how to solve a lot of these issues, I do like being able to say that we know that we've cut a path already, and we've done it with partners that understand that we're out in front and are frankly flexible and fluid in their reactions as well. So it can feel a lot like a partnership, it should. You know, those lessons are shared, right? We're not the only ones going out in front here. Public safety, our customers are going out in front. And I remember, you know, Jeff Bratcher used to say that, you know, we didn't want to be on the crest of the wave. We wanted to be behind it. Well, I think there's a comfortable middle ground where you know where the crest is. You know, you don't want to be too far back, too far forward, but you certainly want to be a leader. You certainly want to be one of the first there. And you want to bring the right people with you. And I think we've done just that.
And if I can add, Donnie, like, you know, James brings up a point about building for scale, right? And the part of building for scale that we don't really see, especially when you're doing scale as quickly as rapid deploy. I mean, you know, what we do is on the tin, right? We rapidly deploy our customers. And there's all the mechanics behind the scenes. I'm not talking about cloud hosting and all that jazz, which we all kind of know the value prop of that. But how do you onboard an entire state's telecommunicators, right? And you're not just onboarding a user, yeah, right? You're onboarding a user that's now got a life or death equipment in front of them, and it's going to help, you know, improve an outcome. So do that efficiently. So we've had to really understand how to deliver training at scale, not just solutions, right? We're not talking about five nines. I mean, I want to get a five nines of training attended, right? Which is, you know, that engagement with the end user is so, so important. Last year, we'd have 9,000 users go through our training platform, right? That's 9,000 people were educated on a platform, which, by the way, it's SaaS. So that platform is going to evolve and change. And those 9,000 people are going to go on top up courses and modules that will get fed through in drip campaigns to make sure they're always up to date and are utilizing the system to the best of the system's ability, not just their own.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that kind of tooling, which the whole world is now kind of changing to this model, but delivering features at scale is one thing, delivering training at scale to make sure that you have the utilization of the data and that data is made meaningful is actually where the art meets the science. So we would be nothing as a software delivery company without a training delivery platform behind us that's actually bringing that knowledge forward.
Wow. I really hadn't thought about it from that perspective, but that makes an awful lot of sense.
Yeah, it's all change management, Donnie, right? Think about it. It comes down to all these digital transformation projects. I mean, obviously, James, as the chief of staff of the FirstNet Authority, has seen this like on a giant scale. But change management is like a real, real thing. And, you know, when you get into systems where people, especially in 911, are operating on muscle memory, because, you know, your call is happening so quick, it's a dynamic situation, and you can literally, you know, you can watch people move. They move in a pattern when you're in a 911 center. It is literally muscle memory. And so to insert oneself into that process, you're asking them to change something that they know works and just tell them that this will work better. And that's where that partnership comes in. And that's why we have to deliver training in a meaningful way to make sure that they trust us and trust adjusting their process, right? Because you're working with the training coordinators, you're working with the state and regional training coordinators, you're improving, you know, response time. So then you want to measure that, and then we have an analytics tool to go measure the efficacy of a 911 center or a 911 system if you're doing statewide rollouts like we do. But it all ties back to that end user who's clicking that button.
Very true, very true. Well, and you mentioned scale. Steve, how many people did you all have in 2017?
3 or 4.
And how many do you have now?
About 110.
Yeah, that's some pretty serious scaling. So,
Hey,
congratulations to you guys. Look forward to hearing what these things that you've teased out, what those are. So please keep in touch. But again, congratulations on all the work.
Thank you, Donnie. Thank you for highlighting the important work this industry is doing.
We appreciate it.